This is Tall Tale TV, your podcast for sci-fi and fantasy short stories. This audiobook will be published in three parts. To listen to all the parts in one place, please visit talltaletv.com/series. Part 2 of 3. Deliverance, written by Hunter Blaine, performed by Chris Herron. Chapter 2. Preternatural eyes locked onto the first tendrils of light that creased the horizon, signaling two things, the first being the obvious, dawn, and the second being my lack of time management. Lilith, damn it! I cursed as the gyrating stems of light danced in seemingly random patterns, promising a horrific and painful demise once they overtook the moon for dominance in the sky. I had a precious few minutes to get back to safety before my preternatural essence was incinerated. I can hear you asking, "But, Mr. Vampire, sir, how can you see yourself in mirrors and not bask in the sunlight? I thought this was urban fantasy, not fantasy." Easy. Mirrors at one point contained silver, which is a holy metal that cancels magic, much like iron. Modern mirrors are made with aluminum because it's cheaper. As for the morning sun, it cleanses the world of most magic, with only a few exceptions. Creatures of the earth and those from faerie are immune to the wrath of the sun. Werewolves are a notable exception that has always interested me. I met one of my dearest friends during World War II when we were slaying Nazis left and right. It's actually where I got my black leather trench coat from. I took it off the body of a particularly delicious SS officer and decided to keep it. After removing all the patches and armband, of course. Anyway, back on track. My friend Depweg is able to transform during the day. I can only assume it is because the werewolf virus is either crafted from the Fae or naturally occurring in nature. Both explanations are difficult to believe, but here we are. I'm not of this earth, or created by the Fae, so sunlight fucks my shit right up. I have deduced that my vampirism merged with my soul and body, creating a perfect balance between being a mortal human and an immortal vampire. The sun cleanses my physical body of the magic, ultraviolently, I might add. See what I did there? I'm punny. Moral of the story is, I tend to steer clear of any sunbathing activities. Standing near the embankment, I chuckled at my inner monologue before snapping out of it with a jolt. Shit! I belted out like a super buff, manly dude, and not at all like a 5-year-old girl who just saw a spider. I oriented myself toward my secret hidey home and leapt into the air hard enough to send chunks of dirt and grass flying. After landing at the edge of the city in one jump, I rebounded into the early morning sky right as the first sheet of light crashed into the new white clouds above. I handled the precarious situation with absolute grace and dignity. Shit, 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 I said with extreme coolness, reminiscent of a vampiric hero who is worthy of his own Netflix series. The sun's tendrils, that only those with special eyeballs could see, grew thicker as they reached into and devoured the night sky. The morning light swept down the base of the clouds and towards me as I leapt from building to building, panic building at my core. I knew I could just land somewhere secluded and dig a hole deep and wide enough to sleep for the day, but I was stubborn and was willing to bet I could make it to my home on time. As I neared my fortress of solitaire, which was buried beneath an old cemetery, I spotted a black church that I had never noticed before. It was awesome! A decaying wrought iron fence surrounded the ancient-looking building. From up above, it looked like a cross with an enormous pointed steeple rising from the center. Atop the church's roof were perched two stone statues that almost seemed to be watching me with grime-covered faces. One was an angel with its wings outstretched, while the other was a cat-like gargoyle, They seemed to be keeping watch over the grounds. The whole church was covered in ancient filth and moss. Stained glass windows were now opaque from years of neglect. The grass around the decrepit building was dead or dying, with gravestones that had been smoothed with time and rendered illegible. One of the short sides of the cross faced an empty road that, if taken, led to my favorite hangout spot, Valenta's Saloon. That must be the church Father Thomas had told me about. It might also explain some of his connections, seeing as how he was so close to Valenta's place. Supernaturals, or soups as I called them, liked to hang out there. It was a safe house for our kind. Plus, Val kept special drinks that even a buff and not-at-all-fat vampire could enjoy. And no, I wasn't lying to myself. As I soared past the church, I thought how it was funny that you never saw something right under your nose until you were made aware of it. It's kind of like when you bought a green car, and then all of a sudden everyone on the road has a freaking green car too. Sunlight kissed the top of my freshly healed skull and incinerated it in a flash flame. "Ah!" I proclaimed in a deep, resonating voice that sounded nothing at all like a teapot starting to boil. I landed on the ground and tumbled in the street, scratching my loyal trench coat. Luckily, an industrial brick wall halted my Autobahn momentum. I rebounded off the wall and lay still, sprawled in all directions, and cursed the sun. "Damn you, Mr. Sun, for having such a predictable schedule and not adhering to my faults," I wheezed. Having had a small portion of my energy burned away and the flesh on my head once again seared off, I was ready for this night to be over. As if in agreement, the morning light landed on the wall near the top of the building next to where I had landed. With my home only blocks away, I shifted from leaping to running at preternatural speed. My thick thighs pumped as my steel-toed boots padded the ground, like a certain cartoon bird fleeing from his canine predator. I ran so fast that I would come across as a blur to any mortal I had passed, though a blast of wind coming from nowhere would have probably been uncomfortable. I had never broken the sound barrier, though, something about not being aerodynamic. I just assumed it was because all my bulging muscles kept me from going that fast. The cemetery came into view, and I sped through the open front gate and to my mausoleum. Stepping to the door, I placed my hands on the cold marble and pushed inward, then to one side. It slid open, screeching in protest before I stepped inside and moved the stone door back in place. I lowered a titanium beam, securing the first entrance to my awesome lair. In the center of the mausoleum rested a marble coffin sitting atop a platform. I walked to it and lifted the heavy lid to reveal a staircase that descended into the earth. One of these days I was going to put a super cool false panel on the wall and have a hydraulic system raise the second door, but I hadn't gotten around to it yet. As I followed the steps, I let the stone gently rest back into place before letting my super special eyes locate the wicks attached to the torches that stuck out every 5 feet or so from the earthen wall. I asked the molecules to excite, and the wicks ignited into ambient flames. Not that I needed the light, but it was fucking cool to do. 40 feet down was my home. I had procured used shipping containers from Florida and had them delivered with specific instructions to arrive at night. Using my handy-dandy blood energy, I had willed into existence giant shovel-like manifestations that looked like they belonged on the front of big yellow machines, and began digging. After placing each of the containers, I had quickly covered them with the massive amounts of clay that the Texas soil contained before placing several feet of dirt on top. Afterward, I had dispersed the remaining dirt around the cemetery so as to not attract attention from the lone employee. He was a young man, eager to do well in his new position by getting to work at sunup and not leaving until dusk. He even had a shack with running water and electricity. The next item on my to-do list was to siphon his resources and provide lighting to my underground lair. For now, my preternatural eyes and a few candles were more than enough to get the job done.
"Duh, I'm home," I called out in dramatic TV fashion.
"You need a watch, John."
A cultured British voice came from the area we had designated as the living room. A propane camping lantern rose off a coffee table, made from wooden pallets, and floated toward me. As the light washed over me, a tisking sound came from the man holding the lantern.
"Tisk, tisk, tisk. Another close call, I see."
"And oh my lord, the smell!"
Da emphasized his point by pinching his nose shut with his free hand. If I said a man was holding the lantern, I would be lying. Unless you believe that the man was only 5 inches tall and could float. Da was a fairy that refused to believe he was a fairy. Instead, he proclaimed aggressively that he was an angel. A 5-inch tall angel that could shift planes to fairy whenever he wanted. I mean, maybe he was one of those angels that sat on people's shoulders and constantly disagreed with an equally statured demon sitting opposite a confused mortal's head. Either way, he was my friend. Da had been there for me for several decades now and provided insight I could never think of. I called him my Devil's Advocate, or Da for short, because I refused to call him by his self-proclaimed angelic name, Raziel. It was a cool name, but I refused to cater to his delusions. Plus, Da was a fitting name for my little sidekick, to whom I would never call my sidekick to his face. On the wooden pallet coffee table sat a huge 12-inch TV attached to a VCR player. Ask your parents what that is, damn kids. An inverter was connected to a car battery, which powered the entertainment center. I moved to the couch made out of, you guessed it, wooden pallets, and looked at the screen. It was paused to Jack Nicholson talking to a freshly burned body wearing a pinstripe suit.
"What's this?"
I asked Da as he sat down, picked up the comically too-big remote in both hands, and pressed play. Jack walked around the smoking corpse and had a one-sided monologue with it. "Grease him now? Well, okay. You are a vicious bastard, Rotelli. And I'm glad you're dead."
"I'm glad you're dead." "Oh, I'm glad you're dead." "Holy shit. What movie is this, dude?"
I asked Da, already completely in love with the film.
"The new Batman movie starring Michael Keaton and Jack Nicholson," Da answered, without taking his eyes off the screen. It was apparent he was already invested in the movie. I picked up the empty Blockbuster VHS box, Lilith, damn it, I said ask your parents, and noticed a second VCR sitting atop the first. Wires ran from one to the other, with the bottom VCR set to record. Feigning shock, I dropped the box, covered my gaping mouth, and looked at Da before I said,
"Da, are you copying a tape illegally? Did you not see the FBI warning at the beginning?"
"I did. It made me chuckle as I started. Now, thanks to you, I'll have to start the whole process over unless we want 20 seconds of a paused screen in the middle of the movie."
I kind of want to watch this now. I mean, when I first heard that Mr. Mom was going to be Batman, I was like, not even. But this looks gnarly. Start it over.
Fine, but only if you promise to stop using teenage colloquialisms.
Letting my Irish mother tongue come out, I said, "I'm just trying to fit in with the times, lad." Switching back to my southern non-drawl accent, I finished with, "But fine, I promise."
"Thank you, psych!"
I tittered as Da sighed in defeat. As I leaned back against the wall in my mirth, I yelped in pain as my incinerated scalp touched the surface.
"Ugh, that's twice today I've had my head set on fire."
"Twice? What happened tonight, John?"
Da asked as the tapes rewound.
"Oh, right. Check this out." I went through the events of the evening in dramatic fashion, increasing in suspense and intensity the closer I got to the part where a wave of fire enveloped me, commencing the epic battle that followed. Daw sat on the edge of the makeshift couch, letting tiny legs dangle freely as a hand stroked his chin. As I finished, he dropped his hands to his lap and said,
"How peculiar."
Daw thought for a moment and added,
"You are confident he used heaven fire?"
"I know what hellfire is, and this was not it. The flames were a very patriotic red, white, and blue, without any of the green that hellfire uses."
"Well, this might be a sign then, John."
Daw looked at me intensely while he spoke.
"Maybe now you can actually use your gift for something other than yourself. A real chance to do the right thing."
"Hey!" I barked. "I killed countless Nazis, scores of murderers, and some other unit of measurement of things that go bump in the night."
"John," Daw began, his expression smoothing into one of legitimate concern. "You did those things because you enjoyed doing them. It is important that you realize that fact before undertaking an alliance with Father Thomas. I feel confident that he will be able to guide you in a way I never could."
There was a hint of sadness in his voice, as if our time together had been wrought with fruitless trying on his part. I took a steadying breath, held it for a few moments, and let it out while I said, "You're right, Daw." Something hit me then, and I softened my voice before I said,
"Thank you for all you've done. I'm only ready for this next step because you helped set the foundation on which it will be built. What's more, my friend, is you did so without asking anything in return."
"I appreciate your kind words, John," Daw said openly, before smiling and adding, "I do hope that didn't hurt too badly."
"I'm melting! Melting!" I pretended to screech. "Oh, what a world!" As if on cue, the sun fully rose into the morning sky, dropping the bottom out of my energy levels. I could stay up during the day if I was so inclined, but my strength was greatly diminished and my eyelids fought to embrace. Daw noticed my instantaneous change in demeanor and said,
"Watch the movie tomorrow night?"
Through a yawn, I said,
"Go ahead and make your copy. I know Blockbuster loves its late fees. I bet one day that'll bite them in the ass."
"Hope not," Daw said. "I bought stock using your money."
Daw was not only my friend, but also my accountant, financial investor, and seamstress. I couldn't even tell you how many times that tiny fairy had brought my trench coat back from the dead.
"Good day, buddy," I said as I stood up and dragged my feet to my room.
At the moment, there was just a bookshelf with a hidden tunnel behind it, a dresser with some drawers, and a bed. Hidden under the bed was my iron coffin, which had served me well for centuries. Iron aided in preventing divination or curses from being used against me while I slept. I heaved the mattress up, which was supported by a homemade wooden frame, want to guess where I got the wood, and stepped into my resting place. The iron lid was attached to the wooden frame and sealed my coffin perfectly once set in place. I winced as my slowly healing skull touched my pillow. Once the lid was closed, I surrendered to the dawn and let myself be submerged under the calm surface of my consciousness.
The Preternatural Chronicles will be a 13-novel series, with Deliverance, the novella, taking place immediately before Book 1, I'm Glad You're Dead, followed by Dawn and Quartered, and Shadow of a Doubt. Book 3 came in about the size of Books 1 and 2 put together, and is epic. As of December 2019, Hunter is simultaneously working on Book 4, Mouth of Madness, and his standalone horror book, Moonlight Equilibrium. Go to hunterblane.com and join his mailing list for up-to-date information on the series. And pick up I'm Glad You're Dead on Audible, narrated by the legendary Luke Daniels. Also, Hunter has a message for you. Hello there, and welcome to my world. If you are listening to this, you probably came across a description somewhere and thought, meh, nothing else to do, and clicked the link. Little did you know the true story behind this, well, story. It begins with two best friends who grew up together, shaping each other's personalities into the assholes they are today. Well, at least one of them, but I'll get to that momentarily. These two boys, let's call them Hunter and John, were all but inseparable. John excelled at music and being the funniest asshole for miles around, while Hunter dabbled, poorly I might add, in his horrible writings. John respected Hunter's writings as much as Hunter, respected John's musical prowess. One fine day, after reading one of Hunter's horrifically detailed short stories about a serial killer, John asked him to write a story about him. Hell yeah, dude! What do you want to be? Hunter asked with brimming honor. A vampire, John responded with a gleam in his eye. But not one of those sparkly ones. A true badass. Done, Hunter said with a smile and an accompanying high five. No, dude, promise. Promise you'll write and finish a book about me. You are the most prolific writer of our generation, and I would be proud to live on for eternity with your words as my life's blood, he said. Or something like that. I might be paraphrasing a little bit, but you get the gist of it. Hunter agreed, never to realize the weight of that promise, until one Sunday morning, his mother called, crying. John had died, leaving Hunter without his best friend and doppelganger. Hunter still thinks about that moment to this day, how the morning light crept through the bedroom window while Hunter stared at the ceiling, noticing how the popcorn created jagged shadows. Then everything started to blur as his chest was crushed beneath what he was hearing, each word stacking heavily upon the other until not even sound could escape his throat. Only tears existed in the horrific realization that Hunter had to make some of the hardest phone calls of his life to the circle of friends of which John was the center of. John not only left Hunter, but Valenta as well. There was also Nathaniel and Depweg, who were stricken with the loss of such a beloved character. And when all three found out that Hunter was keeping his promise to John and writing a book about him, they each wanted to be a part of that journey. Hunter asked them all what part they would like to play in this urban fantasy eulogy, and each immediately knew what they wanted to be. So, please, as you listen to this story, feel free to laugh. Laugh at the situations John is placed in and his dickish dialogue to those around him. Because John is 100% in this story without alteration, albeit he is a vampire. Laugh and let his memory live on inside the theater of your mind. Thank you sincerely from the bottom of my beating heart for giving John the chance to live again. All right, that was part two. Part three will be coming up this Monday, and it's going to be even longer than part one, so be sure to be back for that. And again, I really urge you guys to nab a copy of this on Amazon or Audible. Luke Daniels is an incredible voice actor. If you liked my rendition of it, you're going to love his. But be sure to subscribe before you go. This show is available on YouTube, Facebook, and just about every podcast app out there. And if you're an author with a story and want to submit it to the show, head on over to talltaletv.com, where you can find my submission form. Thanks for listening. I'm Chris Herron, and that's it for today's Tall Tale TV.